Welcome to TearingDownIdols.com. This is the series called Christianity and Judaism, and this is part two, titled Jesus and the Jews. In the last segment, we discussed how Judaism is not the ancient Hebrew religion of Abraham and the Israelites and the patriarchs throughout the temple era. It was not the religion of the Israelites after they made their pit stop at Sinai. And we explored statements from a variety of sources, including Jewish sources, that show how Judaism today is, in actual fact, the modern manifestation of the Pharisees who harassed Jesus and his followers and whom Jesus called out for their wickedness and their hypocrisy. We saw how it originated in Babylon and continued in its development past the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD and into our current era. We established that in no way did Jesus observe Judaism, ever. In fact, he actively opposed its founders and creators and the philosophies that they had, that they developed into Talmudic Judaism. So now today, we're going to examine the claim that Jesus is related by blood to today's Jews. And this means we're going to go into a lot more history. History you'll almost never hear in today's schools or seminaries or churches. And as I mentioned in the last installment of this series, most people just take it as a matter of course that Jesus was a Jew. After all, he was descended from David and Abraham. I mean, you can see his genealogy right there in Matthew chapter 1 and Luke chapter 3. So obviously, he's got to be related to the people who wear yarmulkes and shawls and pray at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. To most folks, it's a slam dunk, but that's because they've been told it's a slam dunk. We've already looked into whether Jesus was a religious Jew, a practitioner of Judaism, and we found the answer is no. So now, we need to examine whether he's actually related to today's Jews, whether he can call them family or vice versa. In the last segment of this series, we also talked about how wherever we find the word Jew in our English Bibles, it indicates either a descendant from Judah, the son of Jacob Israel, a member of that particular tribe, or someone who resided within the kingdom of Judah or the land of Judea, and who observed the customs of those people. It doesn't apply to all Israelites. Jew is not a general term for Israelites or Hebrews. It's a much more specific term than most people realize. And I strongly suggest, if you don't understand that, go back to the previous segment and listen again, because it is very important that we make that distinction. So when it comes down to the question of whether Jesus Christ was a Jew, well, if we're using the term to refer to Judahites who descended from the line of Judah, well, yes, he most certainly was. Nobody who understands his lineage would disagree with this, but again, we have to make that distinction. It's much more accurate to call him a Judahite or a Judean rather than a Jew, because he cannot be equated with the practitioners of Judaism today who call themselves Jews. And I think by the time we get to the end of this segment, you'll see why that's even more pertinent, why we can't call Jesus a Jew. Okay. Right now, though, we need to ask whether the people who claim the name of Jew today are, in fact, Judahite, or even of general Israelite stock. And this brings up another layer to the problems with the word Jew. Jew or Jewish has come to apply to anyone of any ethnicity who converts to the religion of Judaism, which, as we've explained, is not the religion of the ancient Hebrews. You'll hear of black Jews, you'll hear of Chinese Jews, Hispanic Jews, white Jews, Jewish Jews. So just because a group of people call themselves Jews does not of necessity mean that they are in fact of the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I mean, I could call myself a Tudor, but that doesn't mean I'm in fact of the British royal family. In fact, in my case, if I tried to pass myself off as a Tudor, I'd be lying and likely trying to gain something thereby. People would be suspicious. What kind of grift are you running here? And this is an important point. We have to remember that Jew, as it's used today, can refer to anyone of any ethnicity who has converted to the religion of Judaism. So again, just because someone calls themselves a Jew or a group of people calls themselves Jews does not mean that they are in fact the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In Revelation 3:9, Jesus says to the Christians of Philadelphia, "Behold, I will cause those of the synagogue of Satan who say that they are Jews, Judaios, Judahites, Judeans, and are not, but lie, I will make them come and bow down at your feet and make them know that I have loved you." Okay, why did God call them the synagogue of Satan? Why didn't he say temple or tabernacle? Why specifically synagogue? Furthermore, in using the word Satan, which is the Greek noun satanas, meaning enemy, he was specifically saying that these people were of the synagogue of the enemy. What people associated with synagogues were the enemy of Christianity during its early days? Jews. And Christ here refers to them as ones who say they are Jews and are not. Matthew 10, verses 16 through 18, Jesus says, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves. But beware of men, for they will hand you over to the courts and scourge you in their synagogues, and you will even be brought before governors and kings for my sake, as a testimony to them and to the nations." Matthew 23, verse 34, "Therefore, behold, I am sending you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city." So, is there a group of people who claim the name of Judahite but are not? In other words, is there a group of people who claim to be the sons of Judah, the son of Israel, but are in fact imposters? According to Jesus, there are. And remember what we discussed earlier. The names Yehudi and Judaios are regional and racial terms. And yet we read in Esther chapter 8, verse 17, after Haman's thwarted attempt to wipe out the Judahites in Babylon, "And many among the peoples of the land became Jews," Judahites, Yehudi. "For the dread of the Jews," Judahites, Yehudi, "had fallen on them." It's important to remember that the people in captivity in Babylon were of the house of Judah, primarily members of the tribe of Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. The other tribes of Israel had long ago dispersed. So did these people suddenly change their lineage to the line of Judah, or did they suddenly become residents of Judea? Of course not. Rather, they converted to the religion of the Judahites who were sojourning in Babylonia. They were proselytes. The religion of the ancient Israelites did not have a name. It was simply part of their culture, part of who they were as a people. So in converting to the religion of the Judahites, other people, in this case Chaldeans, quote-unquote, became Jews. And this is the first instance in the Bible in which Yehudi has any kind of religious connotation. It refers to people who are not blood Judahites, but rather proselytes from a different nation. Just as we discussed before, Jew or Judahite begins to take a much more racially nebulous meaning at this point. And also notice that this takes place in Babylonia. Babylon, the birthplace of the Babylonian Talmud. Babylon remained a hub of Talmudic activity and philosophy for centuries after this point, as we'll get into later. When a portion of the Judahites returned to Judea, they didn't just bring with them traditions from Babylon, but they also married foreign women of Canaanite stock. We read about that in Nehemiah 13, verses 23 through 24. This mingled their seed. So they produced bastard children who were not acceptable before God as part of the congregation of Israel, as we read in Deuteronomy 23, verse 2. Ezra and Nehemiah made the Judahite men put away their foreign wives and mixed children. But the accounts of historians, such as Josephus, tell us that wasn't the end of the intermarriage. It continued. So more and more mixed-breed children were popping up in Judea all the time. Illegitimate children, unacceptable before God as Israelites or Judahites, but called Judeans due to their residence in Judea. So now let's fast forward to 135 BC, and we read in Josephus' History of the Jews about the warrior priest John Hyrcanus, who conquered the Edomites. And here's what he says. Hyrcanus took also Dora and Marissa, cities of Idumea, and Idumea was the Greek name for Edom, or Esau, and subdued all the Idumeans, and permitted them to stay in that country if they would circumcise their genitals and make use of the laws of the Judeans, and they were so desirous of living in the country of their forefathers that they submitted to the use of circumcision and the rest of the Judean ways of living. At which time, therefore, this befell them, that they were hereafter no other than Jews. So this was a critical moment in Judean history, because now Edomites, the perennial enemy of Israel, had been incorporated into their society. And as a result, Edomites also became involved in the religious and political system of Judea, including the temple and the synagogues. They became Judeans, or Yehudi, or Judaios, due to living in Judea and being part of Judean society. After this point, the Roman historian Cassius Dio wrote the following about Judea. They have also another name that they have acquired. The country has been named Judea, and the people themselves, Jews. I do not know how this title came to be given to them, but it applies also to all the rest of mankind, although of alien race, who affect their customs. Isn't that interesting? So by the time Jesus arrived on the scene, more than a century after the events of Ezra and Nehemiah, Judea had become basically a multi-ethnic, mongrelized society, and Judean referred to anyone living in Judea, whether you were Israelite, Canaanite, Edomite, or bastard stock. Being called a Judean, or if you prefer, a Jew, had very little racial meaning by this point. It referred more to anyone who lived in Judea, Israelite or otherwise, or who embraced the customs of Judea. Remember this, because this is going to be very, very important moving forward. Anyway, along comes Rome, and they needed a puppet king to rule in Judea. They found a very eager candidate in the Edomite or Edomian Antipater, who was then followed by his son, Herod the Great. And the Herods were on the throne in Judea when Jesus was born. They were the ones who were so eager to kill the new king and savior of Israel, they had no qualms about murdering every male Judahite child under 2 years old in the town of Bethlehem. I mean, they weren't his people. He didn't care. He was an Edomite. Edomites had hated Israelites ever since the very start. With political Edomite influence and Pharisaical religious influence in Judea being prevalent in his day, Jesus warned, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." Mark 8, verse 15. Leaven, of course, was a figurative illustration of sin and corruption. Anyway, jump ahead a little bit more. After the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD, the Pharisees were the only Judean religious sect to survive that siege, and they ended up scattering in migrations around the Mediterranean area. And in the 1954 American People's Encyclopedia under Jews, we read this. Following their dispersal, many Jews spread across North Africa to Spain, and during this movement, converted many of the Berber tribes to Judaism. That portion, which moved to Spain and later northward, achieved considerable wealth and prestige and became known as Sephardim Jews. And this whole time, they carried with them the very same traditions of the elders against which Jesus both warned and railed. So due to intermingling of blood with Canaanites and Edomites and a host of other people, the Sephardic Jews today are not related to Jesus. They are not of his family, except maybe, perhaps, through some tiny small amount of Judean blood that might still remain in their very adulterated DNA. Jewish author Alfred M. Lilienthal, in his book What Price Israel, says on page 223, "Here's a paradox, a most ingenious paradox. In anthropological fact, many Christians may have much more Hebrew Israelite blood in their veins than most of their Jewish neighbors." And in another book titled The Zionist Connection, Lilienthal makes this statement on page 768, "When the word Judaism was born, there was no longer a Hebrew-Israelite state. The people who embraced the creed of Judaism were already a mixture of many nations, races, and strains, and this diversification was rapidly growing." So in other words, what Judahite blood the Jews might have had was quickly becoming diluted through miscegenation with numerous other peoples. In the 1980 Jewish Almanac, the first sentence of the first paragraph of the first chapter, titled Identity Crisis, we read this: "Strictly speaking, it is incorrect to call an ancient Israelite a Jew or to call a contemporary Jew an Israelite or a Hebrew." And given how very little actual Judahite blood, if any, remains in Sephardic Jews today, you really can't argue with that statement. Some might argue that even a little Judahite blood still makes them Israelites and thus God's holy people, but let me remind you of Deuteronomy 32, verse 2, which says, "No one of illegitimate birth shall enter the assembly of the Lord. None of his descendants, even to the 10th generation, shall enter the assembly of the Lord." In the King James Version, instead of saying "one of illegitimate birth," it says "bastard," which is translated from the Hebrew word mamzer, which indicates one of forbidden lineage or of mixed blood. God wanted his people pure-blooded. Otherwise, they no longer counted as actual Israelites. They had to be pure Israelite stock. And the phrase "to the 10th generation" is an idiom meaning forever, for all time. There was no way to breed it out of them. So therefore, even assuming these Sephardics have some Judahite blood in them, it doesn't matter. They've been adulterated. They're no longer God's covenant people, according to the law of Moses. So, the 1980 Jewish Almanac is correct, at least as far as Sephardic Jews are concerned. It's inaccurate to call them Israelites or Hebrews. Now, I will admit that this is a rather generalized history of the Sephardics. There are many different subgroups within that group, different sects, with varying degrees of racial admixture, but overall, this is the story of the Sephardic Jews. But here's the kicker. Sephardic Jews only represent about 1/10 of the people who call themselves Jews today. They only represent about 10%. The majority of modern Jews identify as Ashkenazim or Ashkenazi. Now, let's just step back. All right, let's stop and ask some important questions. Israel was divided into 12 tribes, right? 13 if we count the half-tribes of Manasseh and Ephraim separately. And yet, when we talk about the different groups of modern Jews, we find ourselves restricted to only two groups or tribes, if you will, the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi. what's going on? Secondly, why do they call themselves Sephardic and Ashkenazi rather than after the names of any of the tribes of Israel other than Judah? I mean, why don't you hear of Danite Jews and Issacharite Jews and Reubenite Jews and so forth? I mean, I certainly haven't heard of any. And third, where does the name Ashkenazi come from? Well, this last question can not only be answered with the Bible, but it also opens up a whole new world of historical exploration. So let's dig into it. We find the genealogy of the descendants of Noah's sons in Genesis 10. Let's take a look at it. Starting in verse 2, we read the following. The sons of Japheth were Gomer and Magog, and Madai and Javan and Tubal and Meshech and Tiras. The sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz and Riphath and Togarma. Quite an interesting lineup of names, but for the sake of our current topic, we'll just focus on Ashkenaz and Togarma. So, how is it that around 90% of the people calling themselves Jews today have a name that in the Bible refers to a grandson of Japheth? Shem was the father of Abraham, who was ultimately the father of the Israelite nations, hence the term Semitic. So why would they call themselves after a Japhethite ancestor? So let me point back to earlier. Remember, I illustrated how the word Jew gradually became less and less indicative of race and more indicative of religion. And remember the Babylonians in the book of Esther, and then Edomites, and eventually other people started converting to the Judean religion. And what did Dio say? He said that no matter what their racial background, if they embraced the religion of Jews, they became Jews themselves. This was going on even so far back as Christ's time. It didn't mean they were suddenly magically biological descendants of Judah or Jacob. They just followed the Judeans' religion, which eventually fell into the hands of the Pharisees, as we've covered. So, when we look at the name Ashkenaz and realize it's the name of a Japhethite, and that an entire group within Judaism call themselves after that name, we got to start asking questions, don't we? So, again, let's rewind. Let's take a look at history. The famous author H.G. Wells wrote a book titled Outline of History. And on page 494, he says the following. The Idumeans, or Edomites, were made Jews, and a Turkish people were mainly Jews in South Russia. The main part of Jewry never was in Judea and had never come out of Judea. Whoa. That's some heavy stuff there. Let's keep going, see what's going on here. Going back to Alfred Lilienthal in his book, What Price Israel, he discusses the two main Jewish groups. On page 225, he says, Weissenberg suggests two most common types of Jews, the Semitic or dark type of Mediterranean origin with a fine nose, and the Arminoid type with a coarser nose and an appearance of blondness, the Tartar Khazar type, mostly found in Eastern Europe. The Armenians and the people of Anatolia are rather proud possessors of what is called a Jewish nose. Julian Huxley notes that the Arminoid, with his heavy nose and pronounced nostrils, resembles the ancient Hittites. So we find two groups, according to Lilienthal. The darker Mediterranean, which he specifically calls Semitic, and what he calls the Tartar Khazar type, mostly found in Eastern Europe. Obviously, the first group he's talking about are Sephardic Jews, but what about the Tartar Khazar types? Okay, let's look into the name Tartar Khazar. The 1878 Encyclopedia Britannica says of the name Tartars that it is given to nearly 3 million inhabitants of the Russian Empire, chiefly Muslim and of Turkish origin. The majority in European Russia are remnants of the Mongol invasion of the 13th century. Regarding Khazars, the 1878 Encyclopedia Britannica has this to say. Few points have been more disputed than the origin of this interesting people. and there is still no consent amongst authorities upon the subject. They are assigned to the Turkish stock by Latham and Howorth, to the Ugrian by Klaproth and Vivian St. Martin, and have been claimed as Jews on account of their use of the Hebrew character and the profession of the Hebrew faith amongst them. Okay, I'm going to stop and reread that sentence. It says they have been claimed as Jews on account of their use of the Hebrew character or letters and the profession of the Hebrew faith amongst them. In other words, they're referring to Judaism. But their geographical position, their history, and the contemporary witness we have as to their physical character, their language, and their own national tradition may be accepted as conclusive proof that the Khazars were an indigenous people of the Caucasus and near akin to the Armenians and the Georgians. Their King Joseph, in answer to the inquiry of the Rabbi Hasdai ibn Shaprut of Cordova, circa 958, stated that his people sprang from Togarma, grandson of Japheth. So here we have a Turco-Mongol people called the Khazars, descended from Japheth, who are also called Jews, not because of their lineage, but because they had adopted Judaism and the Hebrew alphabet as part of their culture. How did that happen? Well, here's what the Jewish writer Benjamin Friedman had to say in his book Facts Are Facts, published in 1954. Starting on page 51, he says, "The Khazars were not Semites. They were an Asiatic Mongoloid nation. They are classified by modern anthropologists as Turco-Finns racially. From time immemorial, the homeland of the Khazars was in the heart of Asia. They were a very warlike nation. The Khazars were driven out of Asia finally by the nations in Asia with whom they were continually at war. The Khazars invaded Eastern Europe to escape further defeats in Asia. The very warlike Khazars did not find it difficult to subdue and conquer the 25 peaceful agricultural nations occupying approximately 1 million square miles in Eastern Europe. In a comparatively short period, the Khazars established the largest and most powerful kingdom in Europe, and probably the wealthiest also." He goes on, "The Khazars were a pagan nation when they invaded Eastern Europe. Their religious worship was a mixture of phallic worship and other forms of idolatrous worship practiced in Asia by pagan nations. This form of worship continued until the 7th century. The vile forms of sexual excess indulged in by the Khazars as their form of religious worship produced a degree of moral degeneracy the Khazars' king could not endure. In the 7th century, King Bulan, ruler at that time of the Khazar kingdom, decided to abolish the practice of phallic worship and other forms of idolatrous worship and make one of the three monotheistic religions, about which he knew very little, the new state religion. After a historic session with representatives of the three monotheistic religions," and he's speaking here of Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, "King Bulan decided against Christian and Islam and selected as the future state religion as the religious worship then known as Talmudism and now known and practiced as Judaism. This even is well documented in history. King Bulan and his 4,000 feudal nobles were promptly converted by rabbis imported from Babylonia for that event. Phallic worship and other forms of idolatry were thereafter forbidden. The Khazar kings invited large numbers of rabbis to come and open synagogues and schools to instruct the population in the new form of religious worship. It was now the state religion. The converted Khazars were the first population of so-called or self-styled Jews in Eastern Europe. So-called or self-styled Jews in Eastern Europe after the conversion of the Khazars are the descendants of the Khazars converted to Talmudism, or as it is now known, Judaism, by the 7th century mass conversion of the Khazar population." All right, that was a long read, but what we just read was the account of the creation of the people now known as Eastern European or Ashkenazi Jews. So practically overnight, the Jewish population of the world went from maybe a million or so Sephardic Jews to over 10 times that number, not because of any kind of population explosion, but because of the conversion of this Turco-Mongol people to the religion of Judaism. The Viking settlers of Russia eventually conquered the Khazars in the 11th century, and from that point forward, the Ashkenazi Khazars were essentially their own diaspora, much like the Sephardic Jews, and these are the Jews that populate Eastern Europe even to the present day. And this is why Ashkenazi Jews speak Yiddish, because Yiddish isn't a hybridization of German and Hebrew, as we've been told many times. It's actually the language of the Khazars. It's written in Hebrew letter, because that was the written language taught to them by the Babylonian rabbis who taught them Judaism, but Yiddish has nothing to do with Hebrew. It's the language of the Turco-Mongol Khazars. Here's what Benjamin Friedman said about this. Again, facts are facts. The Hebrew characters were adopted to the phonetics of the spoken Khazar language. The Khazars adopted the character of the so-called Hebrew language in order to provide a means for providing a written record of their speech. The adoption of the Hebrew characters had no racial, political, or religious implication. The Western European uncivilized nations, which had no alphabet for their spoken language, adopted the alphabet of the Latin language under comparable circumstances. With the invasion of Western Europe by the Romans, the civilization and the culture of the Romans was introduced into these uncivilized areas. Thus, the Latin alphabet was adopted for the language of the French, Spanish, English, Swedish, and many other Western European languages. These languages were completely foreign to each other, yet they all used the same alphabet. The Romans brought their alphabet with their culture to these uncivilized nations, exactly like the rabbis brought the Hebrew alphabet from Babylonia to the Khazars when they introduced writing to them in the form of the Talmud's alphabet. And then Friedman goes on to explain that Yiddish, the language largely spoken by Ashkenazi Jews today, is in fact the language of the Khazars. Just because it's written in Hebrew characters doesn't mean it's a Hebrew language. It isn't. It's Turco-Mongol, spoken by the sons of Japheth, not Shem. And over time, it incorporated various Germanic and Slavic words simply because its speakers lived among those cultures. But at the end of the day, Yiddish is simply the language of the Khazars. And lest anyone accuse me of just quoting a singular individual who's mistaken or making stuff up, here's the Encyclopedia Americana, 1985. Khazar, an ancient Turkic-speaking people who ruled a large and powerful state in the steppes north of the Caucasus Mountains from the 7th century to their demise in the mid-11th century AD. In the 8th century, its political and religious head, as well as the greater part of the Khazar nobility, abandoned paganism and converted to Judaism. The Khazars are believed to be the ancestors of most Russian and Eastern European Jews. And Jewish encyclopedias talk freely about the conversion of the Khazars to Judaism. I also recommend the book by the Jewish author Arthur Koestler, titled The 13th Tribe, which you can find in audiobook format on my website, tearingdownidols.com. It's all about the Khazars, their conversion to Judaism. It's quite an interesting book. Tons of documentation and correspondence to show he isn't just making things up. And remember what I said earlier, around 90% of the people who identify as Jews today are in fact Ashkenazim. So what does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means that around 90% of the people who identify as Jews today don't have a single solitary drop of Semitic blood in their veins. It means they are in no way related to Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. It means they are Jews by religion only, which means they are not relatives of our Lord Jesus Christ. They are a completely different and separate people. What's more, for all the talk about anti-Semitism today, that term doesn't apply to them at all. Heck, Arabs have more Semitic blood than Ashkenazi Jews do, since they're descended from Abraham's son Ishmael. So in this to-do around Gaza these days, and the evangelicals vehemently supporting Israel's destruction of the Palestinians, I wonder who the real anti-Semites are. And since we're on that topic, it's a fact that Zionism was created by Ashkenazi Jews, pushed and promoted by Ashkenazi Jews, orchestrated by Ashkenazi Jews, and the vast majority of the Jews residing in the nation-state called Israel today are, you guessed it, Ashkenazi Jews. Sephardic Jews do live there, but they're pretty much second-class citizens, as you can read about in Jack Bernstein's book, An American Jew in Israel. The state of Israel is an Ashkenazi thing. It is not a Semitic thing. So anyone who's been supporting them has actually been supporting a Turco-Mongol people descended from Japheth, not Semitic Israelites. This may be a hard and very bitter pill for some people to swallow, but this is the historical and anthropological truth. Anyway, to conclude, is Jesus related to the Jews of today? The answer is no, absolutely not. He was not a practitioner of Judaism, and he was not related to today's Jews, who aren't even remotely related to each other, for crying out loud. In fact, at this stage of history, Jew or Jews doesn't really refer to a racial group at all. They're so utterly diverse, and in many cases so utterly miscegenated, that it's really impossible to say that they're a race. In the majority, they're either mixed-blooded mongrels or Turco-Mongol Khazars, neither of which allow them to be Israelites in any way, let alone a singular ethnic group. So when we use the term Jew today, we're referring to practitioners of the religion of Judaism from a variety of non-Abrahamic, non-Semitic racial backgrounds, whether we realize it or not. So was Jesus a Jew? No. No. Not in any way. He was not a Jew. Some folks listening to this might already know everything I've covered in the last two segments, but there might be some who don't know it, or might be some people who are new to the idea. So if you learned something new, go ahead and share this series with somebody you think might profit from it. But moving forward, we're going to talk a little bit more about things. We're going to talk about the Babylonian Talmud. We're going to talk about Zionism. We'll talk about dispensationalism, the concept of Judeo-Christianity, a whole bunch of stuff. So I hope you'll stick around. And in the meantime, this is TearingDownIdols.com signing off, and I'll see you in the next one.